Now, this is our next instalment of the David series. So to kick us off, Flick is going to read it for us. If you have a Bible and you want to follow, it is 1 Samuel 31 tonight, beginning at verse 31. So Flick, in your lovely Swansea accent.
Thanks. Okay. Chapter 31, verse 1. Okay. Now the Philistines attacked Israel, and the men of Israel fled before them. Many were slaughtered on the slopes of Mount Gilboa. The Philistines closed in on Saul and his sons, and they killed three of his sons, Jonathan, Abinadab, and Malchishua. The fighting grew very fierce around Saul, and the Philistine archers caught up with him and wounded him severely. Saul groaned to his armor-bearer, "Take your sword and kill me before these pagan Philistines come to run me through and taunt and torture me." But his armor-bearer was afraid and would not do it. So Saul took his own sword and fell on it. When his armor-bearer realized that Saul was dead, he fell on his own sword and died beside the king. So Saul, his three sons, his armor-bearer, and his troops all died together that same day. When the Israelites on the other side of the Jezreel Valley and beyond the Jordan saw that the Israelite army had fled and that Saul and his sons were dead, they abandoned their towns and fled. So the Philistines moved in and occupied their towns. The next day, when the Philistines went out to strip the dead, they found the bodies of Saul and his three sons on Mount Gilboa. So they cut off Saul's head and stripped off his armor. Then they proclaimed the good news of Saul's death in their pagan temple and to the people throughout the land of Philistia. They placed his armor in the temple of the Ashtoreths, and they fastened his body to the wall of the city of Bethshan. When the people of Jabesh Gilead heard what the Philistines had done to Saul, all their mighty warriors traveled through the night to Bethshan and took the bodies of Saul and his sons down from the wall. They brought them to Jabesh, where they burnt the bodies. Then they took their bones and buried them beneath the tamarisk tree at Jabesh, and they fasted for 7 days.
Okay. There we are, yeah. Thank you, Flick. So this passage is the end of Saul, isn't it? Saul's been in for a while now, and we've been up and down with him. But this is the end, and it is quite like a sad scene, isn't it, this passage? It's quite anticlimactic. You know, we talked about how much potential Saul had and how much promise. And it is quite like a shameful, anticlimactic death. He's alone. His sons have been killed. He's sort of all by himself, and he, you know, is forced to take his own life to avoid like being abused and stuff, and by the Philistines who are coming. And then, you know, even when he's dead, then the Philistines make a point of really boasting about his death, and they proclaim the good news. So it said all throughout the land, and they, you know, strip him of his armor and nail his body to the wall. And it's all very bleak, like, and a very like sad end. You know, to someone who had great promise was Saul. But at the end then, those last few verses, it says about the men of Jabesh Gilead. And it says that it describes them as mighty warriors, doesn't it? And it says they set out, obviously in a great display of courage in this passage. They set out, as soon as they hear what's happened, they go and they go into like the Philistine territory. They get Saul's body back, like they bring it back to, you know, their town, and they do the proper burial things, and they give him a burial. They fast and they mourn for him, and they like honor like his death. They're like who I want to focus on this evening in the talk is these men of Jabesh Gilead, these mighty men, and in the NIV as well, excuse me, it describes them as valiant men. I like those descriptive words. You know, they are mighty men, valiant men. And I noticed, like, you know, it doesn't say all the men of Jabesh Gilead, does it? It is just those. The Bible really makes a point in, you know, no matter what translation you look at, it makes a point of describing them as mighty or valiant. You know, on the subject of this, yeah, valiant thing, I looked up valiant in the dictionary to find out what it meant. And valiant is described as being boldly courageous, brave, or stout-hearted. And I was thinking, well, that is definitely something I would like people to say if they were talking about me. Do you know what I mean? Like, that is something, that is a characteristic I think we can all aspire to. You know, I was imagining people talking about Tim the Valiant. You know, quite enjoy that. So, yeah, just quickly then, I'm going to look at these valiant men, and I want to think about what was it that made them valiant? And in this passage, like, in what way did they display this, like, courage and bravery and integrity. And what then does that mean for us? And, like, how can we emulate this kind of characteristic in our lives? The first thing we notice, yeah, is they were, like, committed to doing what was right, isn't it? They recognize immediately that injustice has been done to Paul, and they, like, take action. And regardless of, like, the danger and the great, like, potential for personal cost as well. And, reading this, I found it, like, very challenging. Like, it's good. Like, I quite enjoy challenging passages, you know. It gets you thinking about things and, like, inspired. And this is, I did find this quite a challenging passage to read, because I was thinking, like, am I someone that, like, puts doing the right thing, like, at that top priority? Do you know what I mean? Do I, like, over and above personal cost, over and above anything like that? And I know, like, when I was thinking about this for me, like, I can think of examples where I've got it, like, right and wrong, I think. So, for example, when Flick and I finished in uni, we were deciding to get married. We're going to get married straight out of uni. And I know, like, at the time, a lot of people that we spoke to, like, thought it was a bit of a crazy or a foolish idea, you know, speaking financially and you know, we are, like, quite young still. And we had a lot of advice, like, why don't you just move in first? Like, it makes so much more sense financially. Move in, get a place. You can think about marriage and stuff, like, years down the line. And, you know, yeah, it did, you know, it made sense, doesn't it, in one way. But, like, we wanted to do things, like, before God, do it right. And, you know, start our relationship in that way. And, like, it was a bit more costly in some ways. It was a very stressful summer, you know what I mean? Like, finishing uni, getting the wedding together and everything. And, yeah, financially it was, like, a strain and stuff. But it was, like, you know, the right thing before God. And we have, like, now got, like, a foundation, like, to build, like, our relationship and our marriage on. And, like, it has been amazing, like, how, like, God has blessed that. And, you know, we've had a really, like, fantastic, like, first year being married. And, yeah, I'm really, like, grateful that we did that way. But then, you know, as I was thinking, on the other hand, though, like, I can think of times where I have let, like, personal, like, considerations and thinking about, like, the cost of decisions, like, get in the way. So, for example, you know, we are a very friendly, like, and welcoming church here at Cornerstone, aren't we? Like, that's one thing that is a real focus, and we're really encouraged to, like, welcome new people, and that anyone that comes through the door is, like, welcome and at home here, and really feels, yeah, like, they can belong and come along. And, like, I really love this. That was one of the first things that attracted me to Cornerstone. That's why I came here. But, like, you know, now I am a member of the church. Like, I can be quite shy, like, naturally. And, you know, none of us find it easy, do we, to, like, talk to someone who is completely, like, new. It is a difficult thing to do. And so as I was reading this passage, like, this was coming into my head, because I can, like, think of occasions where, you know, I've been in church on a Sunday morning and you see a new couple. In fact, Kieran and Hannah, I think I did it with you guys for weeks. And I remember, like, I remember seeing them thinking, oh, wow, yeah, they're new, like, you know, and people are talking to them, welcoming them. I was like, I should do that. I should go and, you know, introduce myself, make them feel at home. But then, you know, it comes into head, like, oh, well, what if I can't think of anything to say? What if they, you know, think I'm a weirdo? What if? And like, I can think of occasions where then, you know, as a result of that, like, I haven't gone over to, you know, speak to someone. I've missed an opportunity then to, you know, to welcome someone into the church and do that. So, yeah, I find that quite challenging. It's a challenging point, isn't it? Are we, like, people who, like, doing the right thing, or not even, like, the right thing, but, like, doing a good thing, like, doing something that honors God, is that, like, our top priority, like, over and above, like, our personal considerations? Yeah, so that was point number one. Seamlessly into point number two. End of point one. So, yeah, point number two. The second thing that really stood out for me is the fact that they acted in secret. It was a night, wasn't it? Under cover of darkness. And therefore, like, they would have, like, detracted quite a lot from the praise or, like, esteem and recognition that this, like, type of action like would normally have generated for them. You know, like in these times, like we've been looking at this, haven't we, like over the weeks, like military success was like hugely admired. Like the big time soldiers were like the celebrities of the day, weren't they? You know, we had that thing a few weeks with the women like singing about David and Saul getting all jealous and stuff. So yeah, it was a big deal, wasn't it? There was a lot of like prestige involved, a lot of potential for like self, that kind of thing. But yeah, in this case, like they are, aren't they, forced to act in secret. So the fact that they're still willing to like go ahead with it, and they're still willing to risk so much without that like bonus of the recognition and everything, like it says something about their motives, doesn't it? And like the kind of men again they were, their character. And so again, like I think this is quite a challenge for us as well, isn't it? Like thinking about our like motivation for like, you know, doing the things we do and serving and like, you know, striving to do like good things and right things. Like what is our like motivation? Why are we doing that? Is it like to serve God and, you know, and please him? Or is it like looking for recognition and stuff? I know this is, yeah, again, something I found personally very challenging, because like church is a very encouraging environment, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Again, it's another thing, and this is a really good thing. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It's very good. And like, because I've grown up through church and stuff, and I found whenever you do something good, like people encourage you, don't you? It's like the culture we live in. So if you play in the band or like serve the tea and coffee, people say, oh, well done. Like, you're so good when you serve. You have such a servant heart. That's brilliant. Like, you know, I can always depend on you to do this and that. And it's like, it's really good. And it's a really good like culture to have in the church, isn't it? But I have found over the years that you've got to really keep a check then on like your motives for doing it, that you don't let it like slip into that becomes why you do it, or that like you expect it to come. Do you know what I mean? Like I found a quote somewhere that our character is what we do when nobody is watching. And you know, it says about David as well, doesn't it, earlier on in this series, you know, man looks at the outside, but the Lord looks at the heart. And so I was thinking, like, if nobody like ever like thanked me or praised me for doing anything good again, like would I still be as willing like to keep on doing it? An example of like someone that I really have recognized like who is good at this is my mum. Now she is good. She is someone who, yeah, she's a very generous lady, and she's good at giving and stuff. And I remember clearly, as when I was a young boy, we were in a very small church. There's only about like 10 to 15 people in it, and the leaders were really like living by faith. And I don't think they had jobs or anything, and they just lived off people giving them things and that. And so my mum like really like took this on board as part of the church, and we used to go to their house in the night, and my mum would make up a little like hamper of food, and she'd pull up outside. And she'd keep the engine running, and then my job as like a 6 or 7 year old boy was to take this little hamper like down the garden path, I put it on the doorstep, ring the doorbell, and then I had to run back down the path and jump into the car, and my mum would like just like scream off up the road. And like, you know, at the age of 6 I had no idea what was going on, but I thought it was brilliant. Like, they'd be like, leave her there, run away, she's there, like, come on, go. But like now I have, you know, grown up a bit and looking back on that, like, I really see, like, that, like, character element again in my mum, that she was someone that, you know, she wanted to give and she wanted to bless these leaders. But, yeah, she was doing it out of, like, a desire to serve, and, like, you know, she didn't want any, like, praise or recognition and stuff. So, yeah, again, I thought that was a really, like, a challenge, you know, for us again to think like, what are we like when no one is watching? And I was thinking, even like, what, you know, what are we like then when we're at home and stuff? I was thinking, am I as willing to do the cleaning at home as I am up here? You know, because it's just natural, isn't it? Like, that's what we do. We serve in church. That's what, like, we're really encouraged to do it. It's very natural to do. But yeah, it's like, it's a challenge, isn't it? Does it spill then over into our like whole lives, or is it just something we do up here? Yeah. Now, the third thing about these guys is I thought that, you know, what they did was fantastic, but it wouldn't have been like wrong for them not to. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't like a right or wrong. They did the right thing, and it would have been wrong for them not to. It wouldn't have been outright wrong for them not to. And I think sometimes as well, we can come up against situations where it's not as black and white as right and wrong, is it? But you have a choice to make between like the best course of action and the easier course of action. Do you know what I mean? And as I was doing this, I was thinking about Eric Liddell. Do you know Eric Liddell, the runner? He was, Eric Liddell was a sprinter, like back in the 1920s. He's a really good sprinter. And the Paris, I think the 1924 Olympics were coming up. And he was like, he was bang on for a gold medal. You know, he's really quick in 100 meters. But it came out a few months ahead of time that his heat was going to be run on a Sunday. So his like qualifying race was going to be on a Sunday. And, you know, he chose then not to run in that race. And instead, in the remaining months between then and the Olympic Games, he like practiced in the 400 meters, even though like at the time his 400 meter times were like nowhere near like up to standard. He really practiced in that. And then on the day, like he didn't do the 100, he did the 400, and he actually won the 400 in the end, even though it was a weaker event, and he won it. And I think he broke Olympic and world records as well doing it. And when I was reading on Wikipedia, which is not an overly reliable source, but anyway, like on Wikipedia, it says that on the day, apparently, one of the, like the sports like massager people, masseuse, whatever they're called, he slipped him a little bit of paper on it, which had a verse from somewhere in Samuel. I've forgotten to write it down, but it said like those who honour me, I will honour. And he gave him that like to encourage him, and you know, off the back of that, then he won the race. And I thought that was a good option. That was a good example, sorry, of like thinking about how like, you know, it wouldn't have been wrong, like outright like wrong, like a sin for him to run on a Sunday, would it? We've talked about this kind of thing before, about like, you know, how Sunday is not like a legalistic like thing, like you must not do anything on a Sunday. It was just a one-off. So it wouldn't have been wrong for him to do it on a Sunday that once. But he like felt personally convicted that it was a choice. He had a choice to make, yeah, between his like sport and his like achievement and, you know, honouring God and making him a priority. And he, you know, chose God. He put that as because he didn't want to compromise at all. He wanted to make it the top priority. And that's what he did. And like, I think sometimes like we have similar choices, like particularly in like our relationships with each other. Do you know what I mean? Where you've got like a choice between the best and the easier course of action. So like, for example, you know, if you've had like an argument with someone, which again, you know, being married for the first year is something that we have come up against in the flick once or twice, a couple of minor disagreements. You know, you had an argument and you sort of gone your separate ways for a minute and it's all sort of still hanging in the air, do you know what I mean? And then you've got that like choice then, isn't it? You can either sort of leave it be where it is, and sort of like just give it time, like let it blow over, and then, you know, because I know I've done this before, you know, it just sort of subsides then, doesn't it? And you go back to normal and you're friends again, but you haven't really like talked about it or covered it, and you sort of just carry on where you were. And that's, you know, that's one option. Or like the alternative is then like the harder choice, isn't it? And there's a bit of like pride swallowing involved, and you know, you take the initiative to like have that conversation again and reopen the issue and talk about what happened, and do you know what I mean? Admit like if you were wrong and stuff, and look at how to like face, you know, change things if it was the same thing were to happen again. And I think again, like it's not like as black and white as right or wrong, is it? Do you know what I mean? This is like relationships and they go up and down. And you can get away with the first one. Do you know what I mean? The relationship will likely like continue. But like, how much better is it like to do the second thing, to do the harder thing? It is more costly again. But it like just cultivates such a deeper and more honest like relationship. And it like, yeah, it, like we were saying, like it encourages like that courage in yourself. And yeah, it's just it's a good thing to do, isn't it? And again, it's challenging stuff, and like I struggle to write this, I think. I don't feel like the person to be standing here saying it, do you know what I mean? Because everything I was writing, I was like, oh, I should probably change how I do this before I speak about it. But like, yeah, it's really good. Like I like to think about this stuff. Like, you know, challenging stuff is good, isn't it? Like, is it saying James or something? Like, trial produces change or something like that. Yeah, that's good. So, like, finally then, my last point is, it wasn't outright wrong, as you said, but also it wasn't their personal responsibility. Do you know what I mean? So, like, this is a huge, like, event happening at the moment. The Philistines have, like, invaded Israel. They've killed the king. Like, this is massive. Like, it says in the passage, doesn't it? All the Israelites are, like, fleeing their homes because the Philistines are coming to, like, take over their country. Like, they are no longer going to be Israelites. They're going to be, like, subjects of the Philistines. So, yeah, it impacted the entire, like, nation. So it wasn't, like, just them that were being affected. And I was thinking, like, they could have easily, like, have left it to someone else to go and, like, lead this resistance. Like, you know, waited for the next town along to get on their horses and go and get Saul's body back and stuff. But like, the fact, again, that they, like, didn't hesitate in taking the initiative and just doing what needed to be done, like, again, like, shows us, like, again, about their characters, isn't it? And who they were. And when I was thinking about this bit, I was thinking then about, like, we did the worship night before, didn't we, on William Wilberforce, and we've looked at Tom's Shoes and, you know, Blake Mycoskie, and I thought these are people who, you know, it wasn't necessarily their fight, do you know what I mean? With Tom's, like, he just went on a holiday, I think, didn't he? And he saw this thing going on that none of these kids had shoes, and so he, like, took the initiative then that he was going to do something about it. And, like, essentially, I guess that's, like, the basis for all of the charities in the world, isn't it? It's people who take the initiative to, you know, say they're not going to settle for, like, injustice, and they're going to step forward and they will take it on themselves to, like, correct it. And again, though, like, we can apply it to our lives, though. It's, you know, this whole idea of, like, taking the initiative and, like, being the one to step forward. Like even in, like, the small group setting and stuff, you know, or, like, when we, like, have the rotas coming out and that, like, and we have the Sunday school rotas and cleaning rotas and whatever else, and, like I know I definitely, like, spend Sunday mornings, like, dodging it around the hall, you know what I mean, like, watching the clipboard travelling, and, like, but, yeah, like, I think when I was reading this, there's a sense of, like, can we, like, yeah, we should be people, shouldn't we, that are really, like, actively looking for opportunities to do the right thing, and, like, as I was reading this, for me, I was thinking, like, it's not a question of how much, like, so I think this is how I think about it sometimes. I can catch myself thinking, like, how much do I need to do to sort of make myself okay? Do you know what I mean? Like, so how, like, oh, yeah, I play in the band, I do Sunday school. Like, you almost, like, have this mental, like, list of things. Yes, this makes me a good person. Do you know what I mean? Like, and you have it, like, in the back of your mind. But, like, and I often find this with, like, Jesus and God and the Bible and stuff. It often, like, flips your perspective on things, doesn't it? And I was thinking, like, that's not it at all, isn't it? It's like, it's not that. It's like, how fully can I honour God in what I do? Like, how much can I do to honour God and to do the right thing and stuff like that. So, yeah, I thought, yeah, it was a very, like, it's a good little passage. It's just a couple of verses, which I just sort of skimmed over in the past. But, yeah, these guys really were proper, like, good guys of good character. And there's definitely a lot, I think, that we can emulate and apply to our lives. So, that's, yeah, some things to think about. That's the end of my section. Flick, over to you.
Okay, so I'm going to look at the next section now. So this is when David finds out that these men of Jabesh Gilead have done this, and this is, I'll just read you the little bit. It says, when David heard that the men of Jabesh Gilead had buried Saul, he sent them this message: may the Lord bless you for being so loyal to your master Saul and giving him a decent burial. May the Lord be loyal to you in return and reward you with his unfailing love. I too will reward you for what you have done. Now that Saul is dead, I ask you to be my strong and loyal subjects like the people of Judah who have anointed me as their king. So, like Tim said, the men of Gilead now have done this good thing. This was right before God to, like, go and rescue Saul's body. And they have now, like, got this reward of, now they have the protection and the favor of this new man in authority who is going to become their king. And when I was looking at reward, this verse in Galatians I thought was really, really good. It's from Galatians 6, and it's It says, you will always harvest what you plant. Those who live only to satisfy their own sinful nature will harvest decay and death from that sinful nature. But those who live to please the Spirit will harvest everlasting life from the Spirit. So let's not get tired of doing what is good. At just the right time, we will reap a harvest of blessing if we don't give up. Therefore, whenever we have the opportunity, we should do good to everyone, especially those in the family of faith. So it kind of made me think like that there's nothing that hasn't got consequence. And even if like Tim was saying, you know, when we physically see reward and people like praise us or whatever, that's like you can physically see that consequence for what you do. But even if we don't see those things and we do things that are unseen, it all will like filter and feed into our character, doesn't it? And every time we make a good decision, it all builds strength in our character. And we were talking about like daily taking up your cross, that kind of daily thing of making decisions. And then we've mentioned this a lot before, but we do like this quote, don't we, as interns? I am today becoming what I will be tomorrow. And that was a quote that Tom Atima keeps saying in our first module that when we did our DCL. What does that stand for? Developing Courageous Leaders. Oh, yeah. And that was our first module, and he kept going. This was his little theme, I am today becoming what I will be tomorrow. And he kept explaining it as like people tend to think that in like 10 years' time, say, we will like things will be better for us. Like people have like this kind of optimism that in 10 years' time I'll have a better job, or I'll have more money, or I'll be closer to God, and I'll be more mature, and I'll have better relationships or whatever. But he kept saying it's not a passive process. It won't just get better just because. And what we do today and the values we have and how we do things and how, you know, what we do will determine where we will be in 10 years' time and whether things will be better or not. And if, like, you know, if in 10 years' time I'm aiming to be someone who is like respected or reliable or has like good relationships, then what I do now like really needs to be considered, and I need to like, you know, crack on. So when we were talking about this, Tim was telling me a story that he'd heard about a young guy who was working for his fiance's dad, and he was like in a construction company, and when he asked the dad to marry, can I marry your daughter? The dad said, yeah, you can marry my daughter, but I need you to finish this project first before you get married. So the son-in-law, fiance, was like, okay, yeah, I'll finish the project. And because he wanted to like get on and get married, he like did take some shortcuts, and he when he was putting things together, he wasn't like taking his time and really doing it properly. So things were a little bit out here and there. But he got it up, and it was fine. And then on his wedding day, the father-in-law says to him, I wanted you to finish that project because I'm giving this house to you now as a wedding present. And you're like, oh, whoopsies. And obviously this guy was like trying to get this job done so that he could move on with his life. But he was literally building his future as he was going. And I was just like, oh, it's so worth making the effort when, you know, we're living for God. And he does promise us such great rewards. And in Romans 8, it says that we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love him. And again, it means that, like, nothing is wasted. There are no good decisions, and nothing that costs us that to live for God is wasted. And every bit matters to God. And like back in the Galatians 6 verse I just read out, you will always harvest what you plant. So let's never get tired of doing what is good. And I find that my life is a lot easier when I've got like a good attitude of living for God. You know, when you've got in your mind, oh, I'm doing this for God, like I'm working for God, I'm serving God. I just find life is just easier when I have that attitude. And it's just so much more of like a pleasure to serve and to work hard when you know, when you've got your eyes like on Jesus and you're focused on like, who am I doing this for and why am I doing it? Because it is worth it. And in Matthew 6, going back to Tim's story about his mum, It says that when you give to someone in need, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Give your gifts in private, and your Father, who sees everything, will reward you. And it's like that little story is really exciting, isn't it? And I remember when I was a teenager reading that verse and thinking that was really exciting, doing like something in secret. And it's like, it's nice when you have something like you and God doing it together, like secret, like, ooh, you know. And it says like, God who sees everything in secret will reward you. So the other thing about this second bit where David finds out what the men have done was David kind of recognizing what they'd done was right and acknowledging them for what they'd done. And like he was recognizing their success. And, you know, we've talked a lot about Saul and his potential and how tragic it was that he got so angry and jealous of David's success, and it caused like so much trouble, didn't it? And to like recognize other people's success, it needs quite a bit of security in yourself, doesn't it? And David said to these men that both himself and God would reward them for what they'd done. And there's a really good little story in Luke 18 where, you know, when the rich young man goes to Jesus and asks, "How can I have eternal life?" And he goes away sad when Jesus says, sell everything you have. And this next little bit is when Peter and Jesus are talking. I'll just read it out. It says, when Jesus saw this, he said, "How hard is it for the rich man to enter the kingdom of God? In fact, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich person to enter the kingdom of God." Those who heard this said, "Then who in the world can be saved?" He replied, "What is impossible for people is possible with God." Peter said, "We've left our homes to follow you." "Yes," Jesus replied, "and I assure you that everyone who has given up house or wife or brothers or parents or children for the sake of the kingdom of God will be repaid many times in this life and will have eternal life in the world to come." So just like kind of David wanted to reward those men for what they'd done and acknowledge what they'd done, God does what, you know, wants to do the same for us. And in some versions it says that he'll be repaid 100 times over. That's loads, isn't it? Like, it's not just like double or, you know, 100 times over. So like what we're promised for when we live for God is like great reward and eternal life and being repaid many times over. So just to kind of like summarize, I suppose, is like no good decision that we make is wasted, and if we're making sacrifices and living like righteous lives, and it is a big deal to God, and he does see it and he does want to acknowledge it and reward it. So like it says in Galatians 6, let's not get tired of doing what is good, because we don't want to miss the reward, do we, that God has for us. And another thing that this really like spoke to me about was that, you know, like celebrating other people's success. And, you know, like, I can think of friendships I have where, like, friends are really glad when good stuff happens to me, and when I win, they win, that kind of friendship. And those friendships are really strong, aren't they? And they're really, like, rich. And it's, like, lovely when you have those kinds of friendships where people are, when you can really share in each other's happiness. And it was funny when Matthew was saying that all about, like, being thankful to God for everything and stuff, because all good things come from God, don't they? And that, when I was thinking about like having a good attitude and you know, not getting tired of doing what is good, I was thinking like how it so helps me to like I really need to like be thinking about what I'm thankful for, what all the good things that God's given me. And sometimes I'll just write like a massive list and just look at it and be like, this is, you know, this is the truth, this is what I'm living for, and this is who God is and how he's blessed me. So yeah, that really helps me sometimes to like get my attitude going. So yeah, that's kind of, always, we'll always harvest what we plant.